And we now are going to finalize or finish our conversation about Illinois' law regarding what the law calls assault weapons by taking a broader look at some of the legal and constitutional issues at play here. And we are joined now by Vikram Amar, Dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. Vic, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
So broadly speaking, what are the rights conferred by the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and what are the sort of limitations that the court has allowed on those rights?
So for almost all of the nation's history, the Second Amendment was construed as not embodying an individual right to keep and bear arms, but rather a collective right for states to have militias. And beginning in the 1990s, people began to question that interpretation as a matter of originalism and founding history, both in the 1790s, but also in the 1860s, because of course, the Second Amendment, as it applies to states and cities, is a function of the 14th Amendment's application or incorporation, if you will, of the Bill of Rights as being not just against the federal government, but as against states. So there's really been two or three big, and only two or three big Supreme Court cases since the 90s. One was called Heller versus District of Columbia, where the Supreme Court held for the first time in modern history that the Second Amendment does protect individual rights to keep and bear arms. They struck down a DC ban on handguns that was challenged by someone who said, I need to keep a handgun in my home for personal protection. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, you have a right to do that. And then they invalidated a similar ban in City of Chicago versus McDonald, which also prohibited the possession of handguns and was struck down in a challenge brought by someone who said, I need to keep a handgun in my house. Now, both of those cases made very little law in the following important respect. DC and Chicago were the only places in the country that prohibited all handgun possession, even in homes, even for self-defense. So the court didn't strike down regulations that a lot of states were engaged in involving registration, involving ammunition, much less involving weapons that are very different in kind, in the minds of some people at least, from simple handguns. Then just last year, the Supreme Court decided the Bruin case, which struck down New York's regulation of concealed carry on the ground that New York withheld too much discretion among its bureaucrats in deciding whether to permit someone to engage in concealed carry. But even there, the law in New York that was struck down was one of only five or six or seven laws like that in the country. So I think the two big points to make about the Supreme Court, and anyone who says they know what's going to happen is selling you a bill of goods, because no one should know what's going to happen. The court has yet to decide a case that strikes down major gun regulation of the kind that many states have engaged in. Not to say they won't do it, but they haven't done it. So far, they've invalidated laws that are very outlying and that involve relatively lesser important regulation of handguns compared to regulation of automatic or semi-automatic or assault weapon style guns. Now, the big thing that the court said in the Bruin case last year is we have to look at the history, either in 1791 or in 1868, the court wasn't clear, but we have to look at the history to decide whether at the founding of the Second Amendment, whether a law like the one in question would have been okay. And that's a tough thing to do, to draw these historical analogies when you didn't have the same kind of weapons around in the 18th and 19th centuries that you have today. So there's a lot of uncertainty about exactly how aggressive the Supreme Court will be in striking down gun regulations of the kind that are shared by a lot of states that involve higher power weapons.
Comparing the sort of ball and musket to the AR-15. You know, we're right. Very short on time, unfortunately.
Sure.
One other thing I did want to ask you about, and I'll probably only have about a minute and a half here,
sure.
But is this idea of sheriffs saying, you know, sure. What my fealty is to the Second Amendment, not this state law. Are they on solid ground there?
They might be, provided that the Illinois Constitution gives them the power rather than the state attorney general and governor to decide about enforcement. In general, under separation of powers, executive branch officials have prosecutorial discretion. They never have to go ahead and prosecute. A court can tell a prosecutor or a cop, hey, you can't arrest or prosecute this person, but it's very hard for a court to ever tell a cop or a prosecutor, you must enforce the law against this person. And laws are under-enforced all the time. Think about speeding laws. Speeding laws are enforced very differently in different states and in different counties. So if a state wanted to, it could say, enforcement decisions are entirely up to the state level executive branch, the attorney general and the governor, in which case the sheriffs couldn't do what they're doing. But if the Illinois Constitution does what it seems to do, and that is vest power in local elected executive officials, then the check on that power by these local officials is really political. You can vote them out of office if you don't like their policy or their understanding of the Second Amendment.
And you've made that, yeah, so you mentioned the police officer who let somebody speed by at 10 miles over the limit. Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox has declined to charge felonies for retail theft under a higher amount than the state.
Yeah. And immigration is another area. The Obama administration did not want to enforce all the immigration laws as they were written, and they took a very plausible position that they can't be forced to. It's one thing to tell the executive branch you can't enforce. It's another to say you must enforce.
Yeah. Well, so much more to talk about here. I'm sorry we are out of time. I've got a longer list of questions to talk about, and hopefully we can have you back. Vic Amar, Dean of the College of Law at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you so much for making the time to be with us this morning.
My pleasure. Take care.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. I'm sure this is a topic we will revisit in the future as it continues working its way through the courts. A lot of passions on all sides. Thank you so much for joining us. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.